Rabbi, I want to share with you a very, very... I had this observation today, which I want to share with you, which I think is absolutely amazing. People have been thinking about Reb Chaim a lot. And it has been bothering Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Zecher Tzadik V'kol Shivocha, just Niftar in his mid-90s. Rabbi, Reb Chaim Kanievsky was a son of the Stipler. And it always bothered me. It really bothered me for literally for years. It bothered me that if ever... you had a chance to look at the Stipler's works. The Stipler's from his got a set of svarim called Kilat Yaakov, which is on Shas, on most regular Masechtas, Yeshivish Masechtas. He wrote a lot of svarim. The Stipler wrote Birkas Peretz as well, but on Shas, on the Masechtas, he wrote Kilat Yaakov. If you look in the Kilat Yaakov, which is divided into simonim, you'll see that the style has got a certain style, which is quite similar, not identical, but quite similar to what we call the yeshivish style of yeshivas and learning and the iyun and the depth and the analysis, comparisons and then contradictions, regular the yeshivish style of learning. This is in so incredibly different to Reb Chaim Kanievsky's style. Incredibly, and it bothered me, how can it be that is Reb Chaim's style of learning, which is very short, very, you know, the ways the yes and the no, and the mutter also, and perhaps, and this, and the style of learning, and the style of learning is so incredibly different than his father. It's as if they came from two different worlds. Normally, when you have a father and a son, they're somehow aligned in the learning styles. But here, Reb Chaim and the Stipler, there's no two greater... opposites, really. Reb Chaim was very quick and very broad, and not so, perhaps not so deep, but very, very broad, an incredible knowledge of Shas, Poskim, Rishonim, Achronim, everything. But the Stipler was very different, and it always bothered me, this lack of consistency, as it were, and this lack of, normally a father and a son, there's a certain style, which is completely non-existent with those, which is such contradicting, and it bothered me for a long time. Until I found out the aside of this, and I find it absolutely incredible because there's so much we can learn from this. So what's the background of this? The background of this is the following. When Reb Chaim was a young boy, I don't know if it was before Bar Mitzvah or after Bar Mitzvah, I don't know exactly what age, but he was a young boy. He did not succeed in learning. He was in the Yeshiva Ketana, so he probably was just Bar Mitzvah age, and he was not successful. It didn't click. It just didn't work. So whilst all the other Bochim were slowly progressing in their studies, in their Gemara, he was getting... But Reb Chaim, it just didn't work. He didn't have that ability, that skill, that to learn the sugis, that it just didn't work. So the Stipler went to his brother-in-law, the world-famous Chazon Ish, and he asked, my dear, this we're going back to early 1950s or late 1940s, and he says... Chazon Ish, my brother-in-law, I don't know what to do with my son Chaimke. He's not successful in learning. I don't know. He's a nice boy, a sweet boy, a kind boy, but he's not learning. His learning is not matzliach. So the Chazon Ish then told him, he says, what would work for him? So he says, well, I think that, you know, when he goes fast and everything, that Moses style. So the Chazon Ish told him, so let him learn fast. Let him learn fast. Let him one masechta, another masechta, another masechta. Once he has done that, he should go over it again. And then again and again. And then after this with Rashi, and after this with Tosfos, and everything. But then the Stipler said, but that's not what we do in yeshivas. That's not the style of learning in yeshivas. So the Chazon Ish says, who cares? Who cares? So let him do his own way. So the Stipler went back and he told Chaimke, that's the way you're going to learn now. That's right. And the rest is history. This Chaimke developed into the Gon Adi Reb Chaim Kanievsky, that new color to a kul on his fingertips. Literally, everything was kemunach bekufse, and everything was straight in front of him, clear, sharp, everything was there. Indeed, a very different style than his father. What can we learn from this? There's so much we can learn from this. What is that we can learn from this? Firstly, Alpidakoi, very good, certainly. What was right for the Stipler wasn't necessarily right for Reb Chaim. What was right for the yeshiva, the shir, the class of Reb Chaim, wasn't right for Reb Chaim. And he grew into an outstanding giant because he did his own way. Imagine what it would have been out of Reb Chaim had he been forced into that style, which wouldn't have worked for him. He would have never been Reb Chaim Kanievsky the way we knew. Point number two, which I think is also incredibly, it's nearly scary that. Exactly. I think it's incredible. It tells us the genius of the Chazon Ish, because Reb Chazon Ish gave the right advice. And you might, we see the gathering of the Chazon Ish. He just knew what was right there, the right approach. Right? He tells, gives a bit of an idea about what the Aster is. You know, gave him the right advice. And most importantly, and it tells us also, imagine that conversation never would have taken place. Imagine the staff would have done what most parents would have done. Most parents would have said, hey, you know, Chaimke, and I, you know, but you've got to, you know, you're in this yeshiva, and that's the right thing, you know, that's the right place for you, and that's what you've got to do. And he would have squeezed him into the system. He would have squeezed him into the system. We never would have had a Reb Chaim. It's mind-blowing. It's so scary. It's that allowance that he had, the flexibility, that the disciple was great enough to give it that flexibility. Chazon Ish was great enough to see that's what he requires. And that flexibility enabled Reb Chaim to grow into the greatest Torah godel of the generation. It's incredible. Yeah. He learned many bechitzah. Reb Chaim never really had chavusa. Reb Shaul Barzim, he had chavusa for many years. But his incredibly rigid schedule, his nearly inhuman schedule of Seder Hayom, which he had, the eight daf a day, and the Rishonim, and the Nach, and the Rishonim, and the Achronim, and the Zoya, everything, most of it was by himself. He did not learn the yeshiva style. He never did.
I could be wrong, but I think I heard that the Shabbat gave up 10 years of his writing Sfarim to spend time with his son.
That could be. He did write a lot. His whole set of Kiryas Yaakov is like this, but it could be.
Aren't we encouraged to learn with Chavrusa?
Yeah, we are. Of course, it's a default position. Of course, yes. We are encouraged to learn with Chavrusa, because for most of us, for 98% of us, it's wrong if we don't. But it requires godless to understand that for Chaim, he was right to do different things. He would learn better to do... Nobody could really, but it's not only the aspect of not learning Chavusa, primarily it's about the style of learning, the style which is so uncommon and so different than everybody else. But imagine, without that conversation, without that advice, we never would have had a Chaim. I think it's nearly scary. Okay, but let's learn a little bit of Shulchan Aruch Siman Lamed Vav. How long is your Shabbat Segal Rosha?
8 minutes.
8 minutes, good, okay. Okay.
18 minutes.
Okay. Rabbi Yisai, Siman Lamed Vav, we are going to be learning Ziv Beis and Ziv Gimel as follows. Kol Ezrich Elioiz Goylem Echot. We're discussing a little bit the shape of the letters. So the shape of the letters, we see that Kol Oiz, every letter, Siman Lamed Vav, Ziv Beis, Kol Ezrich Elioiz Goylem Echot, it needs to be one block. Lekach Tzorich Elioiz Benekudesh Ala Aleph. So also when it comes to the Aleph, she came in Yud. So we've got the Aleph, we spoke about that yesterday. You've got the diagonal part of the Aleph. You've got the Yud on top of it. And also the underneath it. So you've got to have it all combined, connected. Because it needs to be a Goylem Echad. One. Is block the right word? Like a Goylem. You know, like the Goylem of Prague? You know, it's one. One block, one piece, one shtick. Goylem means a lifeless peace. That's where the word golem comes from. Over the kodesh tachta, view the shin. Also, when it comes to the shin, the parts of the shin, ve'ain ve'achorei tzadishin negas pa'ois. All these parts which are evolving from the main bulk of the letter. So the yuds of the aleph, etc. They need to be touching to the main bulk of the letter. Ve'achshein negas psulin. And if these pieces are not connected and not touching to the main body of the letter, it's possible. So there's only two letters which don't have to be connected, in fact, which may not be connected, and that is the hey and the kuf. Why is that? Why is the hey and kuf not connected? Let's think about that. So by the hey, we've got the left bottom piece, which we learned already previously, it can be tiny, it's still kosher. That little left bottom piece is not connected. Over kuf also, you've got the reish and the long, yeah, that also, they may not be connected. She'ein lega regal begag, the foot is not touching the top bit. V'im noga posel, in fact, if it does touch, it's posel. So here we go. All the other letters may must, they must be connected. So if you've got a shin and the arms of the shin are not connected to the main part, it's possible. If you turn a page or two, you'll see there's always at least two parts of a letter. If you look at the next page, you see the aleph. If this little line is not connected to that, it's possible. You've got a base. If the resh part, the top part, is not connected to the bottom base, the bottom base of the base. Yes, the bottom base of the base. Then it's not going to be kosher. The gimel as well. All these parts of the letters, if they're not touching, it's possible. Rabbi Isai, from now onwards, if you want to be the troublemaker during Kesa Torah, if you want to be the troublemaker during Kesa, the one that so you put in the, when you have your aliyah, and you want to be the one causing that whole big uproar in shul, what you do is you look during landing, you look at all the letters if they're really, really beautifully connected. And all you need to do is all you need to do, that's all. And then you do like this, that's not connected, and you're connected, and then you're going to get the whole commotion, the oven, everybody's going to wake up, and everybody's going to be thinking. So if you want to do that, that's the way to do it. And now you know what we're looking for. We're looking for the letters not being connected. Yeah, so you do like this, and everybody's going to look. And then, so that's the way to, that's what we're going to look for. Now, see, if Gemel Rabbi Isai teaches us the following halacha. So again, it's very easy to remember, only the hay and the kof are not connected. All the other letters must be connected. So if Gimel Aboisai are the crowns, Tzorich Letayek Shatnes Gates. Shatnes Gates. Shatnes Gates. What is that, Shatnes Gates? The Shatnes Gates letters must have a crown. What's Shatnes Gates? Shatnes Gates are the following letters, the Shin, the Ayin, the Tes, the Nun, the Design, the Gimel, and the Tzadik, they must have a crown. Turn the page. You can look at the next at the Shatnes Gates. You can see the Zion. You can look at the Tess. You can look at the Tzaddik. You can look at the Nun. You'll see there'll be crowns on top. The crown. And that's called Letzorich Letayek Shatnes Gates. Those letters must have a crown.
The crown means the three.
The three.
Well, it's just got one. That's not one.
It's not really yet. Yeah, I don't know what it's called. I don't think there's a, but I think it's called just a koitz. No, so we're going to see soon. The soifim nagu letayik ois yis acheirois. The soifim says Shulchan Aruch, they have a minute to actually add more letters and make to make crowns on other letters as well. Ve'im loitiyek, but if you didn't do a, if you were not messiahic, the letters, even Shatnes Gates, lo apostle, the letters are not apostle. So if you're looking at, if you're looking at the letters, you'll see the Shatnes Gates generally have the crown. But they have, the custom is to add by another few letters. They add. There is machlokes about this, and there's various customs about it. There's even various customs how you make this crown. But the way we've got it displayed over here is a very common way, not universal, but a very common way. How did it do this crown? What does it look like? What does it look like? If you look at it, I don't know which edition you've got. The three lines, if you're looking very carefully, what do they look like? Correct. And what if you define, if you look at it very sharply, it's not depends on which edition you have.
This number says a
crown. What does it look like?
Yeah. But look carefully. I don't know if you've got the right board. Does it remind you of the letter? Does it remind you of a certain letter? No, I don't see a shin. I know you. This we can't see it so well. I don't know which edition you have. Many of them are meant to look like a little. If you have to choose one of the letters, what letter would it look like? The crown is made out of three little lines. What letter does it look like? Yes. No. It's meant to look like a little bit like a zayin. Can you see that? A little bit, perhaps. So it depends on the sofa, another edition. It doesn't really look like it, I know, but it's true. So the three crowns, there's also various minhagim and customs, how you make those crowns, how you make them, how they look exactly, the height of them, various minhagim about it. But what we're learning now is, what Shin Shulchan Aruch is, that Shatnes Gates normally have it, and other minhagim adding additional letters as well. But either way, even if you don't do it by Shatnes Gates, it's not possible. Over to you.
Is that a minute?
Yes, it is. It's not my akev. It's very old. I don't know if it's a lochamish we've seen it. Yeah.
You say each line looks like a zayin, or all three together?
No, each.
Right.
Each. Yeah.
Already?
Pastor Rabbi Akiva Eger.
Sure.
So we'll start off. So a meis kol v'chor v'eretz Mitzrayim. We're talking about Malchus B'choros. It comes along, and Hashem is going to wipe out everyone. V'b'chor v'paro ha'yoshev ha'kiso, even the highest paro until the shivcha. He's going to wipe out everyone. And we come to the very next sugya of this is Dabur kol adas b'nei Yisrael. So, what's connected on the Makkos B'choros? It is the Korban Pesach. With all the other Makkos, if there was Choshech, if you didn't want more Choshech, there has to be Yisrael Mitzrayim. No, you don't want Yisrael Mitzrayim, then there'll be more Choshech. If they want Arba, you want to get rid of it, let B'nai Yisrael go. You're not going to. Then we'll keep the Makkah. So we come to Makkah B'choros, and this is the one that is nothing to do with this Mitzrayim. The one to come for it is the Korban Pesach. What's the difference between Makkah B'choros and the rest of them? So the Chora, we see that when it comes to this one. It wasn't Leibah Malach, Leibah Sarach. It was Hashem only. It has to be Hashem. Why? What would have happened if there was a mitzvah between coming, a Malach, someone coming, even a person, Moshe Rabbeinu? It would have become another person to worship, another god to the Mitzrim. And just like the Nile, just like a sheep, just like any Tom, Dick and Harry who looked special, there would have been worship. And Hashem said, you know what, enough's enough. That's it. Everyone's going. If you're not with me, you're being wiped out. And Kol B'chor, everyone, Jewish, not Jewish at this point, it doesn't matter, because if you're not with me and you're not Echad with me, then you're going to be wiped out. So if we look at the Korban Pesach, if we look at some of the halachas of it, we can see this idea of what Hashem is trying to tell us. We see that it has to be with a chabura. It has to be everyone connected, everyone together. Because if you're by yourself, if you're doing b'yechidus, then you're not with me, Hashem says. You're not echad with me. And you're just another distraction. You're another person separate. And any separations is going to be wiped out. I'm destroying all this, everyone that's separate. You're with me all together or nothing. We have the chabura. We have the etzem. It has to be whole. It has to be shalem. Everything has to be together. It has to be roasted. Because if you cook it, it all separates in different pieces. It has to be one big golem together. Loisisiru. It can't be left over in stages. It's all together. Hashem saying, if you're not with me, you're not. This is the one ticket for being destroyed. Is showing me you're with me. The Korban Pesach is very much showing us that we're all together with Hashem, because if you're separate from Hashem, then He's wiping anything out. So that was why the Korban Pesach is the takana for Bnei Yisrael, because that was our only ticket out, to show that we're all together, to show that we're one, to show that Hashem is in control of everything and just Him. We've come a tiny bit further along when they're eating Bichi Pazoi, and they're in such a rush to eat the matzahs. Well, the common story is that, well, there's no time to eat, so we had to run out. But says the Tzfoino, we have plenty of time. We actually knew a Yud Nisan, at least. We've got days and days and days to prepare a feast, to prepare whatever you want to prepare. What's this deal with the 18-minute matzahs? There is no rush. So he says that the Bnei Yisrael have seen Nisim Gulim, massive Nisim, all day long. And they just, they are complete Ma'amin Hashem, and they realize that they have to take this to the next level. They have to not only market the big things, they have to market the little things, and they have to say, you know, when you say you're in an airplane and there's turbulence and you're bashing around, and you're like, whoa, it's really scary. Like, you know, Hashem, sort me out. The sky's too much for me. I can't deal with it. But you sort out the sky, and that'll be great. That's a big thing. It's too big for me to do it. But if I want a snack, It's good. I'm good. I show out. It's just a snack. I can deal with it. No problem. You know. So B'nai Yisrael showing saying no. If you're makir the little bits, then you can be makir the big things. If you can say that Hashem is completely in control of all the food, we have no food to leave. Just like he did all these splitting of the yam, so if he can also provide a sandwich for you, and he does. We do the very very minimum, the 18 minutes, the chai minutes, just the very minimum, just to do hashtadlus. But other than that, it's all Hashem doing. It's all Hashem's food. And so the point of the chipazon and eating matzah is not just to tell a story of what happened a long time ago and we're just replicating it. The point of it, of the matzah, is to show what B'nai Yisrael's darga of Emunah P'tachim was on that level. To show that they were believed Hashem so fully in every part of it, the small things and the big things. And that's what we have to get to. Not just remembering that, but we have to say, okay, Hashem does all the tiny, tiny things and the massive things. And Hashem has a plan for everything, and he's in control of on everything. And that's the point of Pesach. If I may just finish with a story we talked about yesterday with a Rav Victor Miller. And we said we didn't see until 70 years or decades later that the whole plan came around. A very small Hashgacha Prati story that happened to me that I didn't have to take decades. It took 1 hour. Just to show you think you know Hashem's plan, and then boom, Hashem has his own plan. I was in Eretz Yisrael a while back, and I was walking. I walked past a restaurant, and it was a beautiful little place on the mitzvah, everything. And I told my brother the next day. I said, "This beautiful place. I think it was his anniversary or something. He hadn't been out for a long time." So I said, "Why didn't you take it?" I saw this on like 83 Rachov Kanfei Nasharim. And then I told him, why didn't you go? It's a great place, 83. And I'm not very careful. And I said, why don't you go 83 Givat Shaul? So he said, are you sure? Yeah. I said, it's beautiful. It's a nice place. I've been at ages. Take it. It was anniversary. Fine. So he slaps his wife out. It's cold. They're wearing scarves. They're trudging along. I get a call like 11 o'clock. And they say, we're outside. We don't really see it. We don't know what's going on. What? I said, well, you're 83, Rachel Kampi Shoah. I said, you said 83, Givat Shaul. I said, I'm so sorry. I don't know what came over me. I'm not careful. I don't know what happened. I said, don't worry about it. Okay, fine. It's cold. It's late. They're wearing their scarves. He's charging his wife. They haven't eaten since lunchtime. I get a call an hour later. On the way home, I got a call an hour later. At the end of Rachel Givat Shaul, there's nothing there. It's a basic forest. It's like quite empty. There's nothing there. And I get a call, and he said he was just turning. He just turned around from our conversation, and he saw, and him and his wife, they saw this person, something lying down in the corner in the shadows. They went to investigate or something because something was a bit funny. And there was a lady there, and she was lying in a pool of blood, stabbed, and she was completely stabbed. There's no one around, and she was bleeding out blood, and they didn't have anything to do. What should they tie? So they took their scarf off, and my brother tied her arm or whatever, called mother, came along, had possibly saved her life, and it was nice to see that I'd ruined their night, and I don't know why I said the wrong road, but sometimes Hashem, she sees you the plan much earlier. Wow.
Wow.
What a story.
Wow, what a story.
How many years ago was that?
Fine. Good evening. Good Shabbos, Rabbi Yisrael.